Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing invasive inflation, tax filing advice, and credit bureau ineptitude.
You know, when you say tax filing advice, it kind of puts me on edge a little bit. I'm like, oh, like you're going to take advice from us? But then I remember that's what we do every week here on the show.
We're basically giving advice a lot.
We're talking about how we would go about doing these things. This is a podcast for entertainment, but of course, hopefully you take some of the knowledge that you learn from listening to Joel and I talk and you are able to apply it to your own life.
Yes, that's the goal. And we're not against seeking professional advice. That's one of the things we've talked about too, especially when it comes to taxes. We'll talk about that in a minute when we do give some of our own tax advice and kind of detail what's happening this time of year with the IRS. Things are not looking good. But Matt, before we get to that, let's recap actually our How to Money giveaway, which we did.
Cash Money giveaway.
That's right, the Cash Money giveaway. And basically what we did at the end of last year, if you were not privy to or you don't remember us talking about it,
if you're new here,
we gave away $1,000 of our own money, $100 to 10 different listeners because we wanted our listeners to do good in their community, to give that money away and do something awesome with it.
Thus, giveaway.
Yeah, we're giving it away so that you can give it away. And the great thing is, Matt, some of those results have rolled in from the winners. They've told us kind of where they gave that money. And so we just want to kind of like share that with everybody. And there were a few places that I thought were especially cool where some of that money ended up. There's a nonprofit boxing gym in a low-income community in California. Some money went there. There's a nonprofit called Cooperative for Education, which is breaking the cycle of poverty in Guatemala through education.
Yeah, that one's pretty cool.
Yeah. There's the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation of Central Texas. And there were more than that, too. There was one that I thought was cool.
Nature Conservancy.
Yeah. A nonprofit.
Was one that someone gave to?
That's attempting to help connect kids to scientists through
the
pre-scientist. STEM pen pals, basically.
Yeah, pre-scientist, like pen pal. Basically, you get to receive letters and write letters to kids who are looking to enter into STEAM or STEM fields. There was one, too, called Farm to Pantry, where this group, they rescue produce from farms that's destined for the landfill, and they are able to give that produce away. They're able to give away those vegetables and that fruit. In 2020, they rescued over 200,000 pounds of produce that they were able to give away. That was an organization, I think that was in Sonoma. But yeah, thank you to everyone who participated in this giveaway. Thank you for commenting and sharing the organization that you were interested in giving to. Hopefully, you are able to support them no matter what. But either way, I think this is just a great way to get the word out, as a lot of these different organizations depend on charity, depend on our giving, especially at the end of the year, at the end of 2021. They're trying to do that final push.
Yeah.
And of course, we're glad to hear that the How to Money giveaway winners were able to do that as well. And look out for more of these in the future. This is something that we hope to continue to do in different ways. But it was really fun just to be able to Venmo and Cash App people $100. It was a fun way to end 2021. Now we know what Oprah feels like. She's like, you get $100.
Only on a much smaller scale, right? But yeah, exactly. No, I agree, it was fun, and hopefully we can do more of that in the future.
Totally.
It was really cool to see the organizations that money went to, and I feel more connected to some of those organizations.
Absolutely.
And I did not know that most of those organizations even existed, so the fact that they're on my radar is cool too.
Totally.
But Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday flight, and it's basically a quick sampling of stories we found interesting this week that have to do with your personal finances. First one, let's get to tax season.
That's right.
It's going to be here before you know it. Yeah,
basically it's here.
Yeah, it's basically landed at our doorstep, and you know, we here at How to Money have been fans of the fact that lots of folks can file their taxes for free on the IRS, on their free file website.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually just announced free file is officially open as of today.
Today, January 14th.
If you're a go-getter, like, go make it happen. go file your taxes today if you're that kind of person. Me, I'm more of a procrastinator, Matt, so probably not going to happen today.
Wait
for me.
Wait till the 11th hour. You do.
Yeah, not quite April 15th necessarily, but the IRS sadly doesn't do a great job of publicizing the free file system. So most people don't know about it. And we'll put a link to it in our show notes. But it's one of those things that everybody should know about, because you can file your taxes for free if you are in a certain income bracket, right? If you make under $73,000 a year adjusted gross income. But yeah, there are going to be fewer companies participating in Free File this year. We wanted to mention that as well. TurboTax just announced that they're going to be out of it. H&R Block announced that they're not going to participate back in October. So now the two biggest names in tax filing are no longer offering free tax filing through the IRS. And Matt, the truth is those companies have been kind of antagonistic towards the free tax filing service.
It doesn't make the money.
For a while now. Anyway, yeah. And it's just kind of annoying, frustrating to see that they are abandoning this system that has been great for millions of people.
Yeah, and somewhere close to 70% of Americans qualify to file their taxes for free using the different third-party software programs, you know, where they do all the math, they guide you through the process. This is through the partnership between the IRS and individual companies. But like we said, TurboTax, H&R Block, they are no longer going to be options. But we'll link to the Free File Alliance site that lists out participating companies. But a couple of our favorites are Cash App Taxes, which literally it's through the Cash App, but they're doing a great job, and Tax Slayer as well. Both of those options are offering free federal and state returns. And so as long as your adjusted gross income, like Joel said, is $73,000 or less, you qualify to use that Free File software, where essentially you just get to plug your numbers in and the software does all the heavy lifting for you.
Yeah, and Cash App Taxes, Matt, is kind of new on the scene this year. But it's actually not new. It changed names.
Right.
It used to be Credit Karma Tax, which we have talked about on the show before.
We were big fans of it in the past.
Yeah, and now it's changed. It's shifted. It's now under the Cash App logo, and it looks like that is another great way to file your taxes for free. And like, who doesn't have the Cash App on their phone, right? Like, almost everybody uses it to send money to friends to split dinner bills or something like that, and now you can file your taxes there for free too.
That's right.
But here's another thing that we have to note when we're talking about taxes. If you make more than that, you can still file for free. You just can't use any of the partnering software, right? Instead, you can use the free fillable forms that are available online at IRS Free File. I don't think there, from what I've seen, Matt, that there is any sort of income cap when it comes to the Cash App taxes, though.
And there's not an income limit for the fillable forms as well. You can earn anything and, you know, fill out those fillable forms. It's unfortunate that it's called Free File, right? Because if you earn less than a certain amount, then you can use the Free File system, but you can still file your taxes for free if you earn more than that.
It's just slightly more onerous.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not good, not going through some super nifty software program.
Exactly. Yeah.
But here's another thing. Like, I talked about how I'm kind of more of a procrastinator, but I probably shouldn't be this year, because getting started early is going to make even more sense than it normally does. And that's because if you've been paying attention, there's a mountain of issues that the IRS is still dealing with. Some stats came out this week, Matt, and they literally admitted that they have one person on staff to answer phone calls for every 16,000 people that calls in.
Odds are not in your favor.
They're never getting to your phone call.
Holy cow.
In case you're wondering. So you're never going to be able to talk to a human at the IRS. Don't even try. And as of this year, there are still roughly 8 million returns that the IRS has yet to process.
So many.
From last year, they got their work cut out for them. The key to avoiding long delays, if you're expecting a tax refund and you don't want to wait till 2025 to get it, is to file electronically, to file early, and then to opt for direct deposit. If you choose a different direction on any of those fronts, you're probably going to be waiting quite a bit longer.
Yeah. File early and often. Luckily, this is something we only have to do once a year. But it's not like investing where you want to invest early and often.
Yeah, you don't have to dollar cost average your taxes.
Man, let's talk about working from home. Because everyone knows that the number of people working from home has skyrocketed, right?
That's like a no-duh thing at this point.
But I didn't know by how much. On a recent 60 Minutes appearance, the chief economist for LinkedIn, this is Karen Kimbrough, said that prior to the pandemic, it was just 1 in 67 jobs that were remote. Now it's 1 in 7, which is just an epic shift. And then piling onto that, Airbnb, they said this week that they used to find the bulk of their employees in the San Francisco Bay Area, but not anymore. Now they say that every 3 in 4 hires they make are folks who are working from someplace else. It's just crazy to think about how quickly this pivot has happened. But at the same time, when it comes to Airbnb, I feel like this is quite on brand for them. It's just like, oh, you don't need to come in. You don't need to be in a certain location. Just travel the world.
Oh, you're working from an igloo today? That's great.
Exactly. Why don't you use our Airbnb credits that you get every month? Which, that would be a pretty sweet perk.
I'm sure
I don't know
they
if they actually,
that.
Do you think they do that?
Oh, yeah.
Airbnb dollars. What if you only were paid in Airbnb dollars? I'd be like, oh, sorry.
No, yeah.
I need actual.
I also have to buy food.
I need actual money. Can't survive on travel alone.
No, but I'm sure they get some sort of, or most employees or all employees get some sort of.
There's got to be some sort
free
of
Airbnb credits. I got to imagine that exists. But yeah, that is interesting to see. And yeah, 1 in 67 to 1 in 7. That's
a massive shift.
A massive shift that we've seen in just a really short period of time. And since a huge chunk of folks are still out there looking for a new job, there were like, I think it's 39% according to a new survey from Fidelity. The great thing is you probably won't have to move if you don't want to.
Yeah.
And for the longest time in human history, or you had to move where the opportunity was.
Yeah, there's a 1 in 7 chance now that you don't have to.
Exactly. You can stay put wherever you want to be and still get a great job. And yeah, the fact that there are more jobs than folks looking for jobs is resulting in higher wages for a ton of folks.
So win-win.
Yeah.
Work from home and get paid more.
That's the way to do it. And my guess, Matt, is that we can expect even more labor market turmoil in the years ahead.
Yeah.
And this labor market continues to be good for savvy folks who are out there like taking advantage of the opportunities that are happening in the market.
That's right. New inflation numbers, they were released this week. They're definitely still on the rise, although we might be seeing signs of it slowing down. We'll just have to see. But the headline inflation number is now at 7% year over year. This is a couple ticks higher than a month ago. And we've all noticed the impact of inflation on our monthly budgets. Although, you know, it has affected us all to varying degrees. But if you've purchased a car recently, for instance, you've definitely felt the impact in a much bigger way. I'm sure there was some legitimate sticker shock going on. But we wanted to mention some of the potential inflation impacts that almost no one else is actually currently talking about right now, like higher property taxes on cars as well as homes.
Yeah, we're all talking about the price at the pump or the price to buy a car or how
price
much
of bacon.
Bacon costs.
I mean, that was us as well.
Or
hey,
steak.
The price of ribeyes and bacon is something we got to keep our finger on.
I mean, to be honest, the Joel inflation gauge is through the roof because of those two things. But
your own personal inflation index is like through the roof.
Exactly. I've had to tamp down my consumption of those things. But you're right, Matt. Like the things that we're not talking about are higher taxes because of rising values. And so, yeah, if you own a home, the value of that home has been soaring. And so you're like, all right, I'm sitting on more equity. Woohoo. Well, the same thing with your car. You're like, I bought this car for $10,000 and now it's worth $14,500.
Good thing I don't have to buy a new home or a new car right now.
Yeah, exactly.
But you still got to pay taxes on that.
Exactly, dog. Exactly. And so these rising values means rising taxes. And if you live in a state where property taxes are assessed annually based on the value of your home or the value of your car, Matt, the state of Georgia changed that just a few years ago,
yeah,
where you pay kind of a lump sum up front, and that kind of annoyed me until now.
Now, yeah, I'm actually like, oh, it's a good thing that we're not seeing the rate of our vehicles go up.
Yeah, and lawmakers in certain states have said, hey, we're going to try to like roll back valuations and make the tax assessments based on values from a couple of years ago. We'll see if that actually happens. But just a heads up to all of our listeners, if you are paying like an annual tax on your car or home, you need to be prepared for the likelihood of a higher tax bill this year.
Yeah, that's right. Everything truly is costing more than it used to. Joel, we've got a few additional stories we're going to get to right after the break, including we're going to talk a little bit about buy now, pay later and its impact on your credit score. And so we'll get to all of that right after this.
All right, Matt, we got more stories to get to on this Friday flight. And of course, we have to get to our ludicrous headline of the week.
Mm-hmm.
And this one comes from CNBC and it reads, crypto scams are the top threat to investors by far. This article, Matt, was based on data from the North American Securities Administrators Association.
The good old NASA.
It's like a different form of NASA. Not the one sending rockets into space. Although I don't think NASA does that anymore anyway. That's left to the billionaire titans like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos.
There you go.
But basically, they found that losses from crypto crimes have risen 79% year over year. So a lot of more people are getting swindled in the crypto space.
Mm-hmm.
And the question might be, well, why? The answer is that's where the easy money is. There have been so many articles detailing the rise of crypto millionaires. The guy that put $10,000 in Dogecoin and now look at how much money he has. And it's led to just millions of wannabe copycats who are hoping to get rich quickly, using their money in an incredibly risky way in the crypto space, hoping to get rich on the latest token that gets released. But basically, it's been a losing game for a lot of those folks. And yeah, those stories, don't tend to make the newspapers, the people who lose $20,000 or $30,000. And so, yeah, everyday folks are getting burned in the crypto space. And these stats are interesting, Matt, because they're really proving out something that we have talked about on the show, that we've been fearful of for people who are gangbusters ready to get into crypto all out.
That's right. Yeah. And like you said, this goes to show how the scammers, they're always going to chase the money, right? Like, that's all they care about. If you're in the scamming industry or their business, like, there's no service that you provide. There's no sort of higher standard. You are just chasing the money. And so traditionally you see older generations getting scammed, or if there's like a natural disaster, the different funds get set up, right? And folks are pouring money in to support those people. The scammers will show up there as well. But of course, with all the money pouring into cryptocurrencies, all these scammers want a piece of that action, and they're preying on FOMO, right? Yep. Because you've got all of these crypto investors, they're not seeing the type of returns that we saw last year when everybody was flush with cash. And so they're looking to some of the different ways where they can see a quick return on their money. And that's when they do get scammed. But like you mentioned, you know, we don't typically hear about those different sob stories. Although one story that did make the newspapers this week on that front is the lawsuit against Kim Kardashian, some other high profile athletes, that alleges that they're a part of, you know, one of these crypto scams, although in a kind of a different way. But KK, she posted on Instagram to
thanks for calling her that. I appreciate that.
she posted to all of her followers about this specific crypto coin. We actually mentioned it when that was in the headlines like a few months ago.
Yeah.
She mentioned the specific...
We told you then this is a bad move.
We did. So hopefully you listened to us and you didn't weren't one of her followers. But of course, that coin obviously became super popular, driving up the price. And the lawsuit alleges that a few people, the folks generating this buzz in particular, they got incredibly rich by dumping their stake as prices were at these, you know, moon levels. And so what's happening with that coin now? Well, you can probably guess it's lost 97% of its value, meaning that a bunch of normal folks who were maybe looking to grow some of their money, they got screwed over. And so we share this because we want to remind you that if you are going to put some money into crypto, make sure that it's only a very small amount. It needs to be an amount of money that you are willing to completely lose, and watch out for scams. Watch out for fishy behavior where they're asking for you to do something, or, you know, don't click the links. Like, that's the number one thing. If you receive kind of an odd email, don't click the link to find out more what they're talking about. Go to your browser directly. Go directly to your Coinbase account or whatever accounts you might have and see if what they're saying is legit. It might truly be a year-end tax form. So start preparing for the shock of seeing all the transactions that you have to account for with your taxes this year. However, even still, I'm going to be going directly to any of my accounts to get any of those year-end forms. Don't click the links in the email.
Yes, agreed. And just... be aware, it's a very speculative space still, and there are new coins being made every single day, and a few people will get rich, and lots of people will lose money. But let's talk about another place where people might lose money, Matt, the buy now, pay later space. There have been a couple of interesting changes since we last talked about this fast-growing way to buy stuff online. It feels like at every turn, at every online checkout, I'm now given the option to pay across multiple installments instead of paying in full. And that's been great for retailers. People are spending more money because of buy now, pay later. Instead of buying that mattress, $800 mattress all at once, you can pay for it over 6 months. And it sounds great as an individual to not have to pay it all at once without fees or interest. Mm-hmm. But we wanted to mention the CFPB has announced that it's going to do some digging into the buy now, pay later space. And Matt, you and I, we've talked about our reluctance to embrace the companies like Klarna and Afterpay because we think that payment buying is a bad way to go, even when you're removing fees and interest payments. And that's exactly because it's easy to let consumption-based buying get out of control when you're signing up for smaller, more convenient payments. You might take on more payments than you can actually afford. And if you can't afford it up front, but you think you can afford it on payments, ultimately that's going to be bad for your finances. And so, yeah, we would say if that's what it takes to afford that new purchase, you can't actually afford it.
That's right. You know, like, they're all just looking for different ways to make it easier to buy stuff. If we were coming out with some sort of payment processing system, I guess it wouldn't necessarily be a product. I could see it being like a widget, you know, like so you got the Honey app, you know, like the different extensions on your browser. If How to Money was to create one, I think what it would say is that before, like when you would go to click buy, it would be like, are you sure? Just basically second guessing your ability to pay for this. It's like, are you sure you're willing to trade And what if you were able to enter in like your hourly wage, and then it automatically converted it to like how much time it would cost?
Nice.
You know, like,
I like that.
Seriously, like, what if instead of making it so easy to buy, like you mentioned, like what, like a mattress or something like that, if instead it was almost like a CAPTCHA where it slows you down, it bogs you down, because that's what we want folks to do. We're okay with folks buying stuff, but we want you to maybe reconsider, just think twice about it.
Yeah, maybe a couple questions where it's like, do you actually need this? And have you shopped the market to see if this is the lowest price?
Do you have an emergency fund set up? Right. If not, how much of a priority?
Oh my gosh, how annoying would that be to people? They would hate us.
Well, yeah, we would be the worst. But that is what we want you thinking, at least in the back of your mind. This isn't something we're actually going to implement. But now that you've heard us say this, hopefully this is something that you have stored away in your brain. But Joel, so like we're talking about buy now, pay later, there is more news in that space this week. It looks like these installment loans are going to start affecting your credit score in the near future, starting with Equifax. That is set to debut next month. The other two major bureaus have reported similar plans. And so what does this mean to you? Well, if you buy something and you opt to buy now, pay later at checkout and end up not being able to make a payment, it's going to dent your credit score. It's likely going to hurt you in the same way that a missed credit card payment hurts you now. But again, remember, just because someone will lend you money doesn't mean that you should take it. Just because you qualify at checkout, that doesn't mean that this is the right choice for you. We want you to tread lightly when it comes to these buy now, pay later programs.
Yes, and they pretty much everybody qualifies, it seems like, from what I've read. It's not that hard to buy that new item of clothing with BNPL. They're not like doing a super extensive search to make sure that you are credit worthy, which is why more and more people, I think, are jumping on the bandwagon. Mm-hmm. By the way, you mentioned credit bureaus, and Matt, I think everybody hates credit bureaus at this point in time. Am I wrong? I don't know of anybody who's like attached at the hip.
Nobody loves them.
It has like an Equifax bumper sticker on their car or something like that.
I will say it's been a while since they've done a big old goof where they've, you know, accidentally released the information of 25 million Americans.
150 million, actually. But I think everybody hates them. And there's new data from the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, that reveals that more than half of the total complaints that they receive every year is about three companies. The credit bureaus. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about the big banks. I mean, I'm sure that they get their fair share.
Yeah, they're third, fourth, and fifth. Or fourth, fifth, and sixth.
Yeah, but the credit bureaus take the number one spot by a long shot. And to add insult to injury, the bureaus, they used to provide some help to a decent chunk of these complaints. That's kind of what was great about the CFPB, is they would take these complaints, and then these companies would do something about it. Well, not really anymore. They apparently only respond to 2% of all complaints that come their way. And the major three credit bureaus, they need to get their act together. I think the CFPB does too. They're supposed to be the cop on the beat here. They've got to step up their game. But 700,000 complaints and somewhere close to zero responses is unacceptable, especially considering how important credit scores are to our financial lives these days. They're kind of like a central part of getting loans and living life. And it's frustrating to see that when people have a problem and they go directly to the credit bureau, they get no response. And then they go to the agency that's supposed to be overseeing the credit bureaus and they get no response.
Yeah.
And so what are consumers supposed to do? I'm not sure, but something's got to give here because it's not okay.
Yeah. And friend of the show, Michelle Singletary, we actually had her back on that was episode 373 if you wanted to listen back. But she had this article recently in the Washington Post on the credit bureaus as well. And she highlighted the fact that since 2020, if the bureaus suspected that you had hired a third-party debt repair company to get involved and to take care of any errors for you, there's a really good chance that you are not going to hear back at all. And so this only reinforces our recommendation that you never do business with any company that claims that they can fix your credit score. Not only are you going to be out that money, but you're not actually going to see results. So instead, you'll have to go about filing a dispute yourself. You're going to have to DIY it. You're going to have to do it the manual way. There's no shortcut to getting mistakes off of your credit report.
Yes, and it's just still appalling that we're dealing with this, that the credit bureaus are so unresponsive and so vengeful toward their customers. And we're not even really their customers, even though we are the ones at their mercy to do the right thing.
We are the product.
Yes.
Being sold.
It's pretty messed up. All right, Matt, one last thing we got to cover on today's episode is, I think like a month or so ago, we mentioned that it's pretty ridiculous that members of Congress can trade individual stocks. And there have been many cases of senators and their spouses enriching themselves, especially during this pandemic.
Yeah.
And it's it's not okay. And so, yeah, they're making key decisions that impact specific sectors, specific companies, and for them to be able to trade and profit off of that, we think that's awful. And so, interestingly enough, this week, our neighbor and also U.S. Senator John Ossoff, I don't actually know him. I know he lives right around the corner.
He lives in the neighborhood over.
Yeah, but we don't really like hang out or anything. But he agrees with, after this now
maybe
I
we should
to.
Now. Yeah. I feel like now we got to get beers. It's like, hey, buddy, we talked about you.
Turns out he agrees with us, and he's set to introduce legislation that's going to curb this altogether. And it turns out that it's not just a Democrat versus Republican thing.
Like, no, yeah.
This has bipartisan support.
This is across the board because we've seen Republicans and Democrats behaving poorly, behaving suspiciously when it comes to the different trades they've made. But right before certain, like you said, certain sectors or even certain specific companies have seen their stocks either, you know, plummet or skyrocket.
Yeah, and to see that people on both sides of the aisle are concerned about this is heartening. And I just share a quote really quick from John Ossoff. He said, "I'm an advocate for banning stock trading by members of Congress who make policy, who have access to information and economic forecasting." Wow. Yeah, thank
good.
You. Thank you for putting it so plainly.
Yeah, and not only Congress members, but their families as well. Families
yes.
and partners, because, I mean, what good is it going to do if a Congress member, they can't do the trades, but their partner can?
Well, and that's the common excuse
their
gets used.
Can.
It's like, oh, those are my wife's stocks. It's like, oh, yep. Okay. Yeah.
Or in Pelosi's case, it was her husband.
Yes.
I mean, you know, they have a massive portfolio and they have large amounts of single stocks and, you know, with individual companies. And so that's something we want to see curbed as well, hopefully.
Yeah. And just to pick on equal sides of the aisle, Kelly Loeffler, former senator of Georgia,
yep.
Very similar situation. So we're not okay with it, and hopefully we're rooting for this piece of legislation. We'll see what happens. Maybe I'll go knock on Senator Ossoff's door and, you know, give him a handshake for this.
Drop off a six-pack.
Yeah, exactly. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll put our show notes for this episode up on our website at howtomoney.com, including that link to the IRS free file and the Cash App tax filing, among other things that we talked about today.
That's right. We hope everyone has a great weekend, and we look forward to seeing you back here on Monday. We actually have a great interview for you with Leanne Brown. She is a New York Times best-selling cookbook author. We're going to be talking about food. Looking forward to that conversation. And so, Joel, that's going to be it, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.